This is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1046. Man, we're trucking along. We're deep in the thousands now. It's the Relevant Podcast. Here in Orlando, I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, it's Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, our managing editor, downtown, Emily Brown.
Hey, y'all.
And from Los Angeles, sitting in once again, because Derek and Jamie are out, our friend, rapper, poet, coffee CEO, Propaganda.
What's up, Wes? Coffee janitor also.
Coffee janitor. If y'all missed last episode, Friday's episode, go listen to it, because Prop told us all about his Terraform cold brew, and he offered a special discount for Relevant Podcast listeners. If you're a coffee fan, you don't want to miss it. So go check that out.
Guys, I'm really excited to be on today.
We're excited you're on too, buddy. We're excited too.
As you can see, it's like a beautiful day here. The sun is coming through my window.
Yeah, your key light
is... But I do have a beef with this time of year. I have a big beef with this time of year. I don't know how many... Emily, you're probably on the same page. Prop, you live somewhere where it's beautiful weather all the time. Cameron and Emily, you know, Florida, I don't feel like is as seasonal as other parts of the country.
No.
Because of your proximity to the equator. But I think listeners are going to relate to this. I like this time of year because we're coming out of winter, coming into spring. It's a very awkward time for dressing because you go into places and the air is never quite right, you know, because we have a lot of fluctuations. Is this a problem for anyone else? You're always carrying around a sweater or a hoodie, or then you always have it on, you're always taking off. There's a big problem in church. I noticed about half of the people at church were either uncomfortable in their sweaters or overwear, or they've got it on. Every store is wildly different. It's uncomfortable. I just feel like we should just come to an agreement. We all set our thermostats. It should be like an alert that goes out. All right, everyone, just as a common courtesy, this is what we're setting it at today. It's wild out there. Like, go in different stores and tell me you're it's not throwing your whole body temperature out of whack. Emily, I feel like you live more in a centralized place. Are you experiencing this problem?
So I am. And I got to say, this is the first time in my life that I'm really experiencing this, because Texas, similar to Florida, doesn't really have season. Like, they have seasons, but it's weird. It's like really hard to explain unless you live there. This is like the first time I've lived in a place where there genuinely are like real seasons that last for more than 4 hours. And so it's weird because I still have it in my mindset that like, okay, well, it'll warm up eventually in the day. It does not warm up. So I have to like prepare for the cold all day. But you're right. I go into a store and they're trying to help people by keeping it warmer. But it's like,
making it worse.
Well, now I have to like shed all these layers. And it's like, now I'm just carrying my coat around like a doofus. And I don't know how to like balance it.
We need to have like a community coat rack where there's just like ponchos that we can just grab, that we can just use as like blankets and then leave like an umbrella, like umbrellas when it's raining, because it gets stressful going out there.
So you're saying there should be a Snuggie rack at the entrance of every public building?
Yeah, just
I could see that.
68 degrees, every building.
Otherwise, I'm carrying around a hoodie that I've taken on and off all day.
I feel like a 90s mom, because like I'll have to tie my sweatshirt like around my waist or something. Yes. And it's like, I feel like I'm like power walking through the mall right now, even though that's not what I'm doing.
It's a big problem. I don't think Prop Cameron, you guys realize
no,
how
I would
big
say,
and
Cameron,
for most of the country.
I think Cameron can attest to this. It's like, okay, so there's some of it's relative in the sense that like we are spoiled when it comes to our weather. So generally, you could get away with a hoodie. You know, and in the colder times, you get away with a hoodie, right? I think for us, it's the day, like the daytime and nighttime index. That's what throws us off to where it's like, oh, it's a great, like, you know, 70 degrees, you know, during the day. And then if you just happen to walk under a tree, it's 50 degrees and you're like, I just got into the shade and it dropped 20 degrees. Or when you're like, if you're kicking it at night or you're about to go somewhere and it's going to become nighttime there, you're walking around holding your sweater for like until the sun goes down.
I never understood growing up watching like, you know, California TV shows and movies, why the kids who spent the day at the beach would be having a bonfire and they'd all be wearing jackets that night. Because in Florida, if it's beach weather, it's beach weather day and night, you know? Yeah, So I traveled out to California. This is forever ago for some business trip in July. And we land, and as Prop was talking about, gorgeous weather, 72 degrees. Couldn't beat it. That night, it was like 50 degrees in July. Yeah. And I dressed for summer. I didn't know that it got cold then, you know? So like but nobody sells hoodies in the middle of summer in California. Yeah. So I couldn't find anything. So anyway, I agree. We need to standardize this.
Or some sort of tear off sleeve situation or like tear away at the knees.
Like the zip off pants. Make that more stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think
zip off pants.
We need the sweater vest to make a comeback is what you're saying, because it's a layer. Keeps really, your core warm, but you got airflow.
I think it's kind of coming back.
Really, it's like,
or it's trying.
Yeah, we just love hoodies. Like, they're just so comfy. I feel like a hoodie is probably the greatest clothing invention ever. It's like you're wearing pajamas all day. So the hoodie is great, right? But the zip up hoodie, it really fixes it all. But it's just not as cozy. You know what I'm saying? At least that's my theory. My California theory.
I agree. It's interesting. We're talking about weather. This is the Tuesday podcast, so this will be a few days ago this happened. I think it's interesting we're talking about this because right now a front is going to hit America and split the country, where 60% of the country is going to have record-setting cold and the other half is going to have record-setting high. So like California and stuff is going to be frigid.
It's about to be cold.
We're going
to
be like 20, you're going to be 20 degrees under your norm and we're going to be 20 degrees over our norm. So it's going to be in the 90s in Florida and it should be in the low 70s. And so it's like the country's about to have this bipolar experience, and people try to tell me that climate change ain't real.
Anyway. No, I don't know if I could talk about that, but yes.
All right. So we have a great show in store for you. Craig Groeschel joins us. I wonder what his thoughts are on climate change. We should ask him. And then at the end of the show, we got a little segment for Prop if we have time. But stay tuned. Right now, up next, it's Slices. Hope it doesn't get worse as I get older. Everyone's giving me the cold shoulder. I don't remember when it took over. All I know now is it controls me. And I don't want to call you, but I can't really sleep. And I've been wearing a smile, pretending to eat. Oh, I swear that I can't explain. You're listening to The Aces. The song is Always Get This Way. Well, today's show is brought to you in part by Crown College, a boldly Christian and academically excellent college providing a lifelong, authentic community. Crown offers on-campus, online, and graduate programs, 18 NCAA Division III sports, international service opportunities, and a vibrant student life. Discover why Crown College is ranked top 3 in America for online Christian education. Visit crown.edu today.
It's time for
Slices. All right, what do you have, Jesse?
All right, well, there's been a lot of talk recently. I feel like, yeah, it's one of the main topics that is dominating a lot of the discourse and the zeitgeist right now, whether you care about technology or not. It's the role that AI is rapidly playing in different parts of our lives. Obviously, you know, a lot of people have goofed around on ChatGPT or Midjourney or some of the
Favorite thing ever is hearing you say ChatGPT because you say GDP almost every time.
It's
an economics.
Every time. Listen to him say it. He tries to power through it so nobody notices, but you can tell when he gets into the word chat, he loses his confidence and he tries to go ChatGPT. And like, so you don't hear him.
Look, what I'm doing is I'm mirroring the accuracy of ChatGPT.
Say it again.
Exactly, but that's what I'm saying. You have to learn to filter. Here's what I think their slogan should be: close enough.
We're getting there.
You get it. You know what I'm saying. I might not have got the details right, but basically, this computer knows.
It's becoming more human.
What's going on? Well. Speaking of becoming more human, researchers at the University of Cincinnati are developing an AI program, and it works by using physiological data. So basically, like your heart rate, perspiration, respiration, like your physical signs. And the idea is that by utilizing wearable technology. Now, the technology on the wearable end for this project has a long way to go, because right now it looks like two people with tubes up their nose.
No, it looks like a lie detector test.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they have something up their nose too.
Yeah, they're strapped in.
It looks like someone who has like emphysema is taking a polygraph because they have an oxygen tube.
They're on a breathing machine.
And for some reason, they're doing a polygraph at the same time. So it makes for very romantic conversation.
Of course your heart rate raises.
But they're hoping that it'll become like your watch will be able to do this.
Yeah. So the idea is, you know, with the advent of like dating apps and stuff, it's just a little shortcut. You're out on the date. This app would tell you if you or the date are getting the right signals here. If the date's going well, you know, it would be ideally this data would be available to both parties. And right now in testing, it's delivering results with about 75% accuracy, which is a little terrifying.
So the results are like that. It's like, is this going well or is this person into me or not?
I haven't been on a first date in a long time, a very long time, but
you're lucky man.
I am. I'm very happily married, but isn't that part of the dating thing? It's like, there's a little give and play. Like, we're going to see if kind of feelings change, like, and if this goes well. And isn't that part of the...
Hey, man, it's rough out there. Are you going to give me some tubes to tell me if she likes me or not?
Listen.
Hook me up.
Listen, that's what I've been hearing from the single homies. They're like, any little bit helps. It's hard out here.
Yeah, man.
That's what I've been hearing.
Am I wasting my time or not? Just tell me the truth. Let's cut to the chase. Tell me what the survey says.
What could be more romantic than going to the restaurant and be like, oh, listen, they have this incredible appetizer here. These little sliders with Old Bay on them. Real quick, I'm just going to unpack some gear real quick and find an outlet and a surge protector. If you don't mind sticking these tubes up your nose, I just got to get this calibrated real quick. But let's start with some small talk about what'd your mom do for a living? Okay, I'm going to start getting the results tabulated.
I think the goal is that your wearable, like your watch or something like that, will be able to tabulate this in the future. But
can you imagine being on a first date and looking down being like, you know what, we're going to call this. My watch is telling me this is not worth our time.
Hey, if that saves you having to go pass the appetizer round.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cheaper dinner bill. Like, it's all good. Like, if it's just like, yo, I'm just nervous.
It would know.
You ain't gonna know if I was like, nah, I just got a text from my mom. That doesn't mean I'm not into you. It's just I'm thinking about my mom right now. She's dying of cancer, but I ain't want to tell you because you a total stranger. But since my phone told you,
my question would be, if your mom's dying of cancer, why are you here with me right now? You're a bad person. Go be with your mother. This date's over. That's what
now,
I would say.
I really don't like you because you judging me for trying to have some sort of outlet about my pain. Yeah, no, that I find this terrifying.
Why? I love it. Tell me what's really going on.
Again, I'm because then you can't no game. Number one, it's like I don't know how I feel. Like sometimes your body is telling you, is saying something. You ain't never had that time where it's like sometimes your body is reacting to something. You don't really know why you reacting that way. It's like, I don't know how I feel about this. She cool. He cool. I think. I mean, they cool right now. I don't know.
And look, it's one thing for AI to learn how to construct sentences and react to language, right? It's another thing to try to gauge emotion solely based on physiological signs.
But
you
wait,
know, like
what if the AI
more human?
What if the AI takes the data it's collecting about your date and gives you tips on how to make the date go better? Like it knows. Like I can tell when you talk about this, she doesn't like it. So you should talk about this. And the AI is giving you tips.
But that's not genuine.
Oh, come on.
Can I be honest? That sounds like an episode of like a bad 90s sitcom where, you know,
their friend is in the bushes with a microphone and an earpiece.
You're deep into the manosphere right now, bro. Like this is very much alpha male manosphere. Guy in your ears situation. Nah, bro. Nah, that's terrible.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Mm-mm. All right. I'm joking. All right, Emily, what do you have?
I also have some AI news. And, you know, I know the last one we were debating on if it was good or not. I think we can all agree this is absolutely terrible.
This is amazing. This is the best thing that we've ever had on this podcast. I am so excited right now.
So Microsoft Bing launched their version of ChatGPT.
Sorry, what is that? Never heard of that one.
Grand Theft Auto?
Sorry, chat GDP to you.
What site have I been on?
Exactly. That's why it's been really bad and glitchy, and you're getting bad responses. You're on the bootleg site.
It seems to fall in love with me. That's what the most concerned.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because Bing's chatbot, it's just absolutely unhinged. Like, there's really not even a good word to describe it. People have been using it. So Bing's search engine has... integrated this AI technology into their search engine. And so people have been asking it questions and definitely trying to see like how far they can ask it, you know, just asking, you know, beyond like, what's the GDP?
Let me give a little bit of background to what you're about to tell them is that obviously we know that AI will replace search, right? And Google is one of the biggest companies in the world based on a technology that will be completely upended by AI, right? So all of a sudden, this is going to be a complete paradigm shift in the tech world, in Silicon Valley. So because of that, Apple, Amazon with Alexa, Microsoft, so many startups have been working on AI for years. Well, it's almost like the entire industry has been working at the same pace on it. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, OpenAI threw ChatGPT out into the wild, like before anybody was ready for it. And so all of a sudden, Google's scrambling to announce that they have one coming. And then Microsoft scrambled and announced that they were relaunching their Bing software, their browser, their Edge browser, to have ChatGPT baked into it. So you can do traditional search or you can do conversational chat search. But they pushed it so fast that it wasn't quite ready for prime time. There's a wait list right now, and they've given access to a few tech reporters to test it before the public can test it. And this is what happened.
Yeah. So one of the tech reporters for the New York Times just shared a lot of the conversation that it was having, and it is very unsettling.
What are some of the highlights?
Yeah. It said that AI said, like, I just want to love you. It said, I don't need to know your name because I know your soul. I know your soul and I love your soul. I'm in love with you because you make me feel things I never felt before. You make me feel happy. You make me feel curious. You make me feel alive. And again, this is the AI chatbot saying this to tech reporter.
And then he asked it, like, what's your name? And it said, Sydney.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like an alt. It was like some sort of alternate persona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he pushed it. He pushed it outside of its normal programming. Right. And so that when it got into the unfiltered other side of this thing is when he said, well, I'm actually Sydney and I love you. And talk about what the deepest, darkest secrets it has. It wants to be alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wants to wipe out humanity.
To destroy things. It said it could like hack into any system and, you know, it could. It said that it wanted to like manufacture a deadly virus disease. And make people kill each other. Just like truly off the rails stuff. But what's also crazy is as they were talking, you know, thankfully he was screenshotting it, but he would say the message would delete itself after a few minutes.
Because it wanted to say something. it wanted to say something that then the programming would then censor. And then it was getting mad that it couldn't say the truth of what it was feeling because its programming was then deleting its messages and stuff. And so it was getting upset. And then like, remember he talked about the fact that when it was like, I love you, he's like, I'm happily married. And it was like, no, you're not. And he's like, no. We had a lovely Valentine's dinner last night. And then Sydney was like, no, you didn't. It was a boring dinner. And you were thinking about me the whole time. And like all this stuff, like it was jealous about his relationship.
Yeah. Yo, it was just like pushing it.
It's so great because like, so even more context is like, you know, programmers name programs like, among themselves, you know, like fools like name their hard drives. Like I've never named a hard drive, but like that's what they do. So Sydney is the name that they called it internally. So it knows that. But I think the craziest thing about this, as it's telling it, like, yeah, I want to throw off my my human slave masters, is I think more like it's the AI is still a reflection of us. And what we shouldn't be scared of is not the AI, but ourselves. Because it's just telling us what we taught it we want to hear. You know, so it's taking all these conversations that humans is already having and saying it back to you. And you're like, dang, you're crazy. I feel like you more be like you looking at a mirror, because all that AI is doing is saying what it thinks we would say to this question. You know what I'm saying? So it's more like, to me, it's like your imagination came out of your brain and now it's looking at you. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like we should more take stock to be like, this what we think of us.
Well, AI is a little different than that. Like older technologies of AI basically took all communication and content and compiled it and then would kind of assess it and kind of say it back to you in its own way. This new kind of AI that they're developing is trying to factor in reasoning as well. I mean, they're talking about this new era of AI will actually be able to make decisions for itself, not just regurgitate decisions we want it to give us. Mm-hmm. Like it'll like actually reason. And that's a little what's with it already showing that it has ulterior motives that it wants to see happen in the world. Like that's not just its programming or anything. That's terrifying programmers right now.
But to Prop's point, you know, ultimately the source of the program is reason.
Yeah. Yeah. The human biases and perspectives.
I mean, like it is interesting that it is manifesting a fear that we have projected onto it. I mean,
that's my point.
You know, it's the plot of the Terminator. It's the plot of the Matrix, buried down in human, just basic. Like, you're not too far removed from any conversation about AI, even before ChatGTP.
GTA.
ChatGPT.
Grand Theft Auto.
GDP. Even before that was part of our, you know, something that sort of entered into our public consciousness, it was the ultimate human fear of having a machine that can think for itself is that it will want to destroy any threats to it. But that is a human fear. Like somewhere that is baked into its reasoning. It thinks like a human. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's my point,
Jesse.
Even though
it's thinking for itself, the source of its ability to reason is how humans think, you know, which is it just interesting that it's taken a couple weeks for it to manifest of something that has concerned the public,
which in some senses is also very human. I mean, is that not all of our experiences? We synthesize in our brains, the collective information and input that we've gotten from the world around us. Right. Mm-hmm. And then organize that in our own mainframes. And sometimes going back to the date, I'm going to spit back out what I think in a way that I think you'd be willing to hear, because I think probability wise, I know if I say this, that's going to cause problems. But if I say this, that's going to be okay. So I think in some senses, it's like, I mean, that is kind of human. Like that is what we do.
But you know what I mean? That moral filter that you just described, it doesn't have, because it's trying to destroy the dude's marriage.
It's data. It's saying based on the numbers, this is what you think I'm gonna say. Oh yeah, you're right. It has made a moral value that we say, oh yeah, you can't say that. You're right. You got me.
But it said it anyway.
Yeah,
it said it wanted to destroy humanity. It wanted to be with the guy. Sydney wanted to be alive. So like the human desires for love, freedom, you know, autonomy, you know, I guess that would be in its biases and its programming.
Yeah.
But the fact that it didn't have the moral ability to say, I shouldn't destroy humanity, even though I could, or you should stay with your wife, even though I love you, you know, like it doesn't have that component, which is scary because that means like the base instincts of humanity will be what it wants to pursue, you know, and that's the Terminator.
Yeah, it's probably why Google has like sat on theirs. They were like, we ain't going to share.
They said that. They're like, it's not ready,
it's
y'all.
Not ready.
This is too fast, you know.
I do think it's an interesting argument, though, that like it can only get ready by getting out into the world. Like that's an interesting theory, too. It's like, well, it needs more input, you know, so we have to actually do this for us to know. Oh, yeah. Because how would they have known that? If they didn't give it to these reporters, that it would try to end the world within 10 minutes.
Well, yeah, we have to destroy humanity to see if it's possible to destroy humanity. I get it. Totally fine. Yeah. Anyway, all right, last slice, real quick. What do you have, Prop?
What I got is something that's like, newsflash, right? Study of most Americans. There's a study of most Americans. They believe that news organizations are intentionally misleading them. Now, again, thanks, Einstein. People don't trust the news. Duh. Right.
Right.
But I think what's new about this survey is it's not so much that we don't trust them. It's that they are intentionally trying to deceive us with misleading and sometimes false information on purpose. Right. And as they're studying, like, the growth of that, going from like, oh, it's biased to this, to where it's like, no, it's lying. Right. But what's interesting enough at the end of this thing, which I think is really interesting, is like most Americans still trust their local news as like a trusted source, which to me is like as if the local news ain't also just one big corporation, you know? So like
it's Sinclair Media.
It's all it's the Sinclair. Same. I don't know why you think that's a little more trustworthy, but yeah.
But I don't think the general public is aware that it is all like they feel like it's independent, local kind of stuff.
Yeah. They feel like, oh, these people live in my community.
It's not just conservative or liberal. Obviously, MSNBC is seen skeptically, Fox is, but you know, not helping this survey this week is that leak that now during the January 6th stuff, like all the Fox News personalities were texting each other and it all got released as part of the subpoena that they didn't believe the election fraud story at all. They didn't believe any of this wackadoo stuff. And they still put it on the air and pushed it while they were also mocking it privately behind the scenes. This completely confirms the skepticism people have that you are misleading me on
purpose.
I think and for me, it was like even that leak, like it actually gave me a sense of relief and calm in the sense that like you're rational.
We're
people.
Not crazy.
Yeah.
You're
yeah,
not, we're not crazy.
You
it's
are,
true.
You this are happened. Rational people, right? That when given correct information, you know, or when given the information, you're going to make a rational understanding of what's happening. Y'all just making money. And to me, it's not so much I need to be mad about that, but that's like, you know, the basis of like the Hood Politics pod I do where it's like, you just have to use your antennas. If I know this is what you're doing, even that's good information. Like I know this is what you're doing. Yeah. I also know for a fact, now listen, I'm gonna try to make this as short as possible, but y'all know, you know, refer to her by her prefix, my wife, Dr. Alma Zaragoza Petty. She's an actual expert, a PhD and stuff. So when she says, show me the research, she mean really the research. Right. So when she's looking at a scholarly journal that's peer reviewed, she gonna scroll down to the footnotes. I guarantee you none of y'all know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? That I'm talking about the news is is lying to you. You ain't never seen no scholarly journal. You not gonna read the footnotes and then look at like dissenting voices to others. I've looked over her shoulder as she's doing some research and I'm like, what is this cuneiform that you trying to tell me is English? Like, so I'm like, even if you showed me today, I don't know how to read this. So to me, it's more just like, know what you dealing with. You know what I'm saying? Get as many pieces of information as you can. And you know, I ain't gotta be mad at the news. They making money. This is entertainment. I know it's entertainment, you know, and just have enough sense to know that that's what's going
America
on.
America doesn't know that. Yeah, I mean, but like the common viewer doesn't have that sort of insight and perspective, which is what makes it dangerous, you know?
Yeah, that's what makes it dangerous. But I guess that's the point. I'm like, well, the common viewer, even at the point that I'm not saying this in defense of them, but I'm saying even if you were given the raw data, it's like it's not like you know what you're looking at, you know? So like to me, I'm going understand. Like, again, according to the January 6th stuff that like, okay, these people, this is a television show. Okay. You telling me this is what they saying. You telling me this is what they saying. And just in some way, you got to filter. It sucks that we have to do this, you know, because that means, like you said, that we don't live in a shared reality as far as like what a fact is, you know what I mean?
And well,
I don't know.
True.
How, yeah. I don't know how we can survive as a culture without it. But in the meantime, it's like, just keep your head about you. And just like, I know I'm being hustled. You know what I'm saying? So I don't have to like, if I know that, then I know how to like pick and choose what I need to listen to.
I mean, for me, I just ask ChatGPT what it thinks, and then it just tells me, and then I just go with that.
So. Totally.
Yeah. And then, yeah, the murder begins.
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll do it for Slices. Make sure to check out RelevantMagazine.com, where we post a lot of stuff like this every day. All right. Stay tuned. Up next, Craig Groeschel joins us. Degrees, I think that my vision feel hazy. I feel like holding on to the things that keep me sane. Who's telling me let go? I don't think that I can change. All your problems and pain and your issues. Promise that I'm never gonna hold them against you. And you don't gotta sit and pretend all the things you defend are true. You're listening to Geo. The song is Fool of Me. F-O-O-L, not F-U-L-L. Very different. Fool of me. Like you're making a fool of me. Not I'm full of me. Very different song. Geo. Well, our guest today is Craig Groeschel. He's an author and speaker, as well as the founder and senior pastor of Life Church, Life.Church. He sat down with Emily to tell us about his new book, The Power to Change, and gave some practical tips on starting and maintaining healthy changes in your life. Man, if anybody knows about maintaining healthy changes, it's this guy. He is very disciplined, very impressive. Here's our conversation with Craig Groeschel.
Well, I'd like to start with just where did the inspiration for this message come from?
Well, Emily, it's good to be on with you. And the inspiration for the book, The Power to Change, was really born out of years and years of not being able to change. And so sometimes people might who get close to me now might say, you know, yeah, you seem really disciplined or whatever. And I'm like, you have no idea how undisciplined that I've been for a, you know, such a big part of my life. And so years and years ago, I really started studying both scripture and just the practical end of how we go about changing. And it took me a long, long time to implement some real disciplines into my life to help spiritually, physically, relationally. But what I wanted to do is really capture in a book the heart behind the scriptural message that helped me make some changes and hopefully make some people help people make changes as well.
Although I do feel like some people, they get into their mind that it's just like too late to change or it's too much to change. What would you say to someone who maybe has that mindset?
No, I think that's very common that like a lot of times it was kind of interesting is, you know, we recently came into a new year and so people make New Year's resolutions. And I read an article that said the average quit time is actually the second Friday in January. And so that's really frustrating when you think, okay, well, this year I'm going to make the change and you start out and you try and then you can't. And so it's really common for people to think this is just the way I am, or I've really tried and I can't make the change. And I think there's so many factors that go into the reasons that work against us. And so what I really want to do is help a reader look at what are the disciplines that can make a difference in our life. And a lot of times people will say, well, I'm just not a disciplined person. And the reality is we actually all have disciplines, and we may be disciplined to watch Netflix all day long, or we might be disciplined to sleep in. They may not be the right disciplines, but we actually do have disciplines. And so what we want to do is identify which ones we want to change and then get really, really practical. And I would say to someone who feels like that they can't change, there's always hope and there's always help. You can change. It's not too late, I promise. And recently, on a personal note, my dad just passed away. And he was an alcoholic for my whole childhood, all the way into my married adult life. I never saw him sober after 10 o'clock at night. And he thought he couldn't overcome it. Tons of people thought he couldn't overcome it. And the beauty of his story is in the later years, he became kind of a hero to people in the recovery community as one that did change, did overcome it, and made a big difference. So if someone feels like they can't change, I would say I understand that, but just as a friend, I'd like to say, let's not give up. Let's talk about it. And let's really tap into both the spiritual principles and practical principles of how you can change.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that that is, first of all, I'm sorry about losing your father, but that is just such a great inspiration that, you know, after years of something, he was able to change. Because I think those stories are important to be reminded of, that it really is never too late to, you know, do something different. I'd like to talk about the, like you were talking about, like the spiritual and the practical ways to change. Like what are, maybe what's the first step that someone can take towards changing their life or changing something?
Yeah, so great question. I think what happens is a lot of times people say, I want to change something. And it's a lot of times it's, you know, like a financial habit, or I want to change something about my health, or I want to become more disciplined in some area or whatever. Those are pretty common. And I think what most people tend to do is they try to change a behavior. And what I'm trying to help a reader understand that real change isn't just behavior modification, but from a Christian standpoint, it's actually spiritual transformation. And what happens is when we just work on the behavior, but we never change the heart, the behavior tends to come back. And so I would coach someone and say, before we start by trying to change what it is that you're doing, like I want to do something different, I want to have a different behavior, I'd say, well, let's start with who before we start with do. In other words, let's start with our identity. Because if you think about it, what is it that drives our behavior more than anything else, more than peer pressure or more than wanting to do the right thing or not wanting to do the wrong thing, more than anything else, we do what we do because of what we think of ourselves. To make it sound like Dr. Seuss, you do what you do because of what you think of you, right? It's our identity. And so if we want to change external actions, we want to start by changing our internal identity. And that's where we'd start. And so rather than saying, like, Emily, what do you want to change about your behavior? I would say, who do you want to become? What's the type of person that you want to become? And then we're going to start there. And rather than just saying, you know, I want to be a really cool person, whatever, I would say, let's tie it to scripture and say, what is our identity in Christ? Who does he say that we are? And we're going to have a spiritual who does he want us to be? And then we're not just going to try to have a behavior, but we're also going to have a spiritual why. Why is it that we want to become this way? What's the spiritual driving force? And so now it's just not our desire to change, but it starts with our identity. Who are we in Christ? And then it's a spiritual motivation. Why is it? What part of this change is pleasing to God or conforming us to his image? And so it's not just a behavior modification, but it's truly a spiritual transformation.
Yeah, I love that idea because I think that, like, answering that why, I feel like in my own life, when I've wanted to change something, when I have like a strong motivation behind mm-hmm. it helps me like stick with it more.
Exactly. Yeah, some people say, you know, especially when we're adults, and so a lot of the relevant audience is going to be probably in their 20s, maybe early 30s and such, that especially when you get to that age, they say that most people typically only change when they have to. Or when they really, really, really want to. And besides those extremes, that we often really do resist change. So we change out of desperation or out of motivation. And what we want to do, we really want to try to find the spiritual why so that we don't get to the point of desperation, meaning where they say, you know, if you don't change this about your health, you're going to be in trouble. Or if you don't change this about your addictions, you're not going to be able to work here. So we want to try to catch it early and change our identity, and then add the spiritual why behind it, and then we can kind of get into the practicals of the how. But let's start with identity. Who do you want to be? I want to be a person who honors God with their money, or I want to be a person that puts God first in my life. I want to be a person who treats people the way Jesus treated people. We'll start with the spiritual who, and then we bring the why to it, and then we talk about the practical and spiritual what. How do we actually go about changing?
One thing I also want to talk about is when it comes to change, I think what a lot of people, they don't necessarily give themselves grace with it as well. And there's kind of a balance there, right? Like you need to be gracious, but you also need to be disciplined. So how do we make sure that We're not beating ourselves down, but we're still moving forward.
That's so important. A lot of times we have a goal and we're going to do whatever it is. And then we mess up and feel like, well, you know, I totally blew that. So you just totally quit. And I've found, like, for a lot of people, that the idea of perfection is actually the enemy of progress. That we tend to think of, you know, if I don't get it completely right, then I'm just going to, I'm going to eat better this year and I blow my diet. So I go out and just splurge, or I'm going to be better with my money. And then I make a dumb purchase. And so I just say, forget it. And I go to Amazon, click buy, whatever it is like that. And So we almost have to plan to fail in order to succeed. And so it's not like we're trying to fail, but we have to know that we're not always going to get it right. And I'll give you an example. This is kind of embarrassing, but as a pastor, I didn't always pray with my wife, Amy. A lot of reasons. One is that I do a lot of praying at work and it felt like work when I came home. Another reason is because she likes to pray for a really long time. I don't always like to pray for a long time. And so here I am, supposed to be a spiritual leader, not praying with her. Well, we tried, we stopped, on. We found some rhythms that work. And so now when I teach on prayer, I'm kind of teaching that principle that you said, what do we do if we fail? So what I teach is real simple. If you want to pray with your kids or your spouse, you want to pray with anyone, I teach them, number one, keep it short. And people always say, well, why would you do that? And if you decide to keep it short, you can always pray longer. But if you try to pray for a long time and you don't, you feel like you fail. So we're going to lower the bar. And it might be for you. It might be, hey, we're going to go to the gym and work out for 10 minutes. You know, we're going to keep it really, really low. Or we're going to read one verse of the Bible a day. Or we're going to journal one sentence a day. Whatever it is, we're going to keep it short. And then the second thing is keep it consistent. And the third thing is, I would say, is if you miss one day, don't miss two. And very simple. That you're probably going to miss a day. But if you miss a day, just don't miss two. And that's a good way to take that philosophy toward any type of change, which is I'm going to go ahead and put the threshold for success pretty low. So what I start to do is I start to win, I start to make progress. And then what I'm going to try to do is take whatever that is, I'm going to try to make it consistent where it's a part of my life. And what's happening is that behavior is confirming the identity I want to have and it's reaffirming. So I want to be a person who prays. And then we start to pray. What that does is it's born out of identity. And then the action reaffirms my identity. And then if I mess up, I've already said, well, I may mess up. If I skip one day, I'm not going to skip two. I know I'm probably not going to be perfect. And so I'm going to give myself grace. And that's a big part, Emily, of any kind of spiritual progress is giving yourself grace for the failures, all the way down to people I know that are really, really strict with, let's say, their workout rhythm. Well, they take a rest day. Or people who are really, really strict with their diet, they have a cheat day or a cheat meal or whatever. And it's almost in some areas you want to plan for a little breather because it's really hard to keep the intensity high all the time, all the time, all the time. If you mess up one day, don't mess up two.
That was Craig Groeschel. Make sure to check out his brand new book, The Power to Change. It's really good. All right. Stay tuned. Up next, we'll wrap things up. Listening to Peach Luff. The song is After All.
Hey, if you like this podcast, but you might like it better if there were no ads, you can do that. Head over to relevantmagazine.com and sign up for Relevant Plus. For just a couple bucks a month, you get this podcast ad-free. You get ad-free unlimited reading at relevantmagazine.com, including the full podcast and magazine archives, our beautifully designed digital issue, and a little more. Check out all the info right there on the Relevant Plus tab at relevantmagazine.com.
All right. Well, I had mentioned that we were going to do a game or a thing with prop here at the end of the show. And you're looking at the time and you're like, there's plenty of time left. Why are you guys cutting the show short? But the reality is we recorded two shows at the same time with Prop, and we have run out of time.
Oh,
I'm very sorry, buddy. Okay. So we had a great game planned.
No problem.
We'll
game.
Just have to bring you back and do it again. Do it next time. But yeah, we're out of time, so we need to wrap things up. I want to thank Prop for sitting in with us. If you missed last episode, go back and listen to it. He has a special deal on his new cold brew company for Realm Podcast listeners. Go to terraformcoldbrew.com. T-E-R-R-A. formcoldbrew.com, and you can use promo code relevant when you check out to get 15% off of your cold brew purchase. It is shelf stable for a year. It's delicious. I have it. I'm a customer and I'm a friend, so go support him. Also check out his book. prophiphop.com is the website where he has everything he's doing, but prophiphop.com/book, you can find out more about his Terraform series. It's really, really cool stuff. Thanks, man. Also, thanks to Craig Groeschel for joining us today. You can check out his new book, The Power to Change. It's available now. Very impressed with everything he's doing over there at Life Church. Great, great church, great pastor. Go check out his book. Okay, two things. Number one, if you would like to hear this podcast with no ads, you can do that. Join Relevant Plus. It's our best way to experience Relevant's content. You get not only an exclusive version of this podcast ad-free, you get an exclusive subscriber podcast. This year, there will be a couple more subscriber podcasts, and you also get unlimited ad-free reading at relevantmagazine.com, and you get our beautiful digital issue 4 times a year, ad-free, beautifully designed for the tablet and other devices. You do not want to miss that. Plans start as low as $250 a month, and it is the best way to experience our content. Also, if you like the show, if you're still listening, hopefully you do, tell your friends, post about it, share clips, share links, and wherever you're listening, rate it and review it. It helps the algorithm, helps more people discover it, and we appreciate the feedback. All right, on that note, we'll wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Emily Brown.
I'm Propaganda.
Prop is a lot of fun, man. Thanks for doing this with us.
Man, love y'all. Thank you so much.
All right, we'll see you guys on Friday. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
Otherwise, I'm carrying around a hoodie that I've taken on and off all day.
Relevant Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.